Yeah. They gave us Obama like, yeah, it was gonna stop the fight. Yeah, like it was gonna stop the cause. Folks still scraping, trying to find them some socks and drawers. Yeah, and something to eat. The IRS is coming, so I'm back on these beats. Barack pushed hope, Reagan pushed dope, Clinton pushed something down a young gal's throat. Yeah, and since we talking about throats, white folks, what you know about ropes? Yeah, what you know about trees and men swinging from them that look like me? How you say that don't affect us? Tuskegee, how you let them infect us? Yeah, it's fear of the black semen putting sage on a page to eradicate these demons. This for Tulsa, Oklahoma, this for Rosewood.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Tariq Elite Radio Show, and I am your gracious host. My name is Mr. Tariq Elite, also known as King Flex, also known as Tariq Nasheed. Glad to have everybody tuning in. Today's show is brought to you by STDHomeTestKit.com. Ladies and gentlemen, do not be out there walking around burning. You can get yourself taken care of. You don't have to go down and take those embarrassing visits to the clinic. Get checked out right in the comfort of your own home. That's STDHomeTestKit.com. And today's show is brought to you by NoirHair.com. That's N-O-I-R-E Hair.com. They got the hookups on the Brazilian extensions, Cambodian extensions, anything to get your head looking the way you want it to look. Use the coupon code Tariq and get 7% off on everything on the website. That's NoirHair.com, N-O-I-R-E Hair.com. And today's show is brought to you by HiddenColorsFilm.com. Every last one of you should have the Hidden Colors movie, Hidden Colors 1, 2, and 3, the authentic copies. You should have that at HiddenColorsFilm.com. And speaking of Hidden Colors, there will be a free Hidden Colors 3 screening out here in Los Angeles, November 15th. That's the Saturday from this one, November 15th, Saturday, at 12 noon. It's going to be early. And you can get all the information at TariqLive.com. That's TariqLive.com. So if you are in the SoCal area, the Los Angeles area, join me. We're having a screening and a question and answer segment after the screening right here in Los Angeles. And the information is on TariqLive.com, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, let's get into some game. Let's chop up game, as we always do right here on the Tariq Elite Radio Show. A lot of stuff I want to talk about. I want to talk about a lot of things that's going on in the news right now. Because, you know, we have a lot of black entertainers being funneled out into the forefront, kind of wagging their finger at other black people, telling them to stop doing things to make all these good white people stop liking you. Stop doing all these things to make people practice white supremacy upon you. We keep getting these speeches from very carefully selected black entertainers and black public figures and black people who are made into public figures. And people like that are put into the forefront to deceive you, because the name of the game, the reality is, for melanoid people, for black people, people classified as black, there's a different rule book, period. So when people come out telling you to stop doing certain things as black people, like pull your pants up, stop using broken English, stop cursing in rap songs, stop saying the N-word in rap songs, stop doing this, stop doing that, stop walking around with hoodies on, when people start telling you that, as if that's the thing that's causing systematic white supremacy, these are people who are being very disingenuous, and these are people who are being deceptive. And the reality is, like I said, there's a different rule book for black people, period. That's just the way it is. Whether you choose to acknowledge that or not, that's on you. But there's simply a different rule book. And you have what I call the Butter Biscuit Brigade. These are the groups of black people who are co-opted by the dominant society to distract the black community, to openly criticize the black community, to act as a shield for white supremacy. But again, we have to understand the different rule book that we are judged under. And that's a harsh reality for a lot of us to really accept. That's a harsh reality. Y'all remember a few weeks ago, there was a picture of a black female. She was graduating from college. I think she was graduating from college. She had a baby. And it was a picture of her in her graduation gown, her cap and gown, and she was breastfeeding her infant. And people cried bloody murder. They were going in on this sister. All this ratchet, ghetto, hood rat. The white supremacists were going in. This is the reason why black people are in the position they're in. They blamed everything on women like that. They used her as an example of black cultural failure. They were going in on this sister. You can Google this picture. The picture's still floating around, but the sister was in her graduation cap and gown, breastfeeding her kid, and they were just going in, ghetto black culture this, black culture that, hood rat black women, black culture, the whole nine. Now, a few days ago, there was another breastfeeding picture, this time of a white lady, same thing, she's in her cap and gown, she's graduating, and she has an infant, and she's breastfeeding her infant in her cap and gown. The lady's name is Jackie Sharkey. I think the lady is from Australia somewhere. So her picture of her breastfeeding her child, that went viral. But it was a totally different narrative. The headlines read, how cute, how adorable, a woman graduating, breastfeeding her baby. This is so touching. It's so sensitive. It's so nurturing. What a great mother. It was a totally different narrative when the white woman was doing it. Nothing different. Only thing different, the races of women. That's the only thing. And people praise this white lady, but demonize the sister. Again, this is the system we live in. It's not because we're doing something that's causing the dominant society to practice systematic white supremacy. We live in a system like that. And black folks who make excuses for that, they're being disingenuous, and they know they're being disingenuous. And when we try to make this plea to the dominant society about the inequities and the contradictions, they play dumb because they know the deal. There was another situation. A brother a few days ago named Caldrick Donald, I think that's his name, down in Florida. He was a mentally ill gentleman. He was staying with his mother. His mother called the police, which she should not have done. His black lady, black family. They called the police to help her give him his medicine because I think he gets a little rowdy and a little ornery when it comes to getting his medicine. And the police comes, they get into a scuffle, and the man is mentally ill. The police take the man in a back room and then kill him. Kill this brother. This is why black folks, you have to understand that we're judged by a different playbook. The white supremacists, they can get away with being mentally ill. When people shoot up these movie theaters and they shoot up these schools and they shoot up daycare centers, they get to walk out in cuffs and people talk about how mentally ill they are, but they still get to live. You understand? The white supremacists, they can shoot up everybody. They can blow up daycare centers, everything. People say they're mentally ill, take them to court and put them in special holding facilities. We don't get that treatment. That's a harsh reality. And black folks, we got to get out of the habit of calling the police for every little situation we have, because right now calling the police is just giving them the green light to kill you or kill one of your loved ones. We're not in a position right now, in the way we are right now in this country, we shouldn't be calling the police for shit, to be honest. Especially something like helping a mentally ill family member get medicine. We're not in that environment right now. That's not what we need to be doing. They're looking for any and every excuse to blow us away. They're shooting us at traffic stops. They're shooting black folks for jaywalking right now. You understand? So that's the society we live in. So we are judged by a different rule book, whether you like that or not. Another situation. And I'm pointing out several things that's coming across the desk, by the way. And there was a situation of a young man, and this story is a couple of years old, but it was on my Facebook page. Shout out to the brothers and sisters who put this on my Facebook page. It was a kid. His name is Demias Jemerson. Little football player. At the time, I think he was 11. He might be like 13 or 14 right now. His name is Demias Jemerson. He was playing football at school, at a little junior high school, something like that. This was somewhere on the East Coast. You guys can Google his name. And this kid was so good. He's a naturally gifted football player. And he was the same age as all the other kids in the league in that school district. He's the same age, same size. So he wasn't bigger than all the other kids, because a lot of times what happens is that some of these schools, they might have a black kid who's like bigger. He might be the same age as all the other kids, but he might be a little bigger, and then people will cry foul saying, oh, look, he has a size advantage. But this kid is not any bigger, not any older than all the other kids on the team. And I think he goes to a predominantly white school district, I think. But the gist of the story is, this kid, every time he touched the ball, this dude would make a touchdown. I mean, this kid was that good. 11 years old, just running circles around all the other kids on the field. He was just a naturally gifted player. So good to the fact the school district, banned him from making touchdowns. They had to stop the kid because they dug up some obscure rule in the school district's playbook saying that if one student or one person keeps making touchdowns, you gotta bench them so that all the other kids can get to play. And their excuse was they had to bench the guy and stop the little boy from making so many touchdowns because all the other students, they're not learning how to play football. He's taking the ability to learn how to play football away from all the other students. And that sounds innocent, but they wouldn't do that to no white kid. They wouldn't do that to him at all. They would praise that kid. They would prop that kid up. This is what they do to our kids. When our kids excel, they find ways to thwart them. And they'll find ways to isolate them. So we just have to understand it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. And in many cases, when we're dealing under the system of white supremacy, if you're not good, you get criticized for being lackluster. You get criticized for not working hard enough. You get criticized for failing. When you do succeed, oh, well, we're going to have to tone you down so that everybody else can catch up. You see, the name of the game is inequality. They have to keep the game rigged when it comes to systematic white supremacy. The game has to be rigged. If one of us starts to excel, they notice it and they thwart that shit very easily and very quickly, or they'll co-opt that for themselves. That's that whole Blindside thing. With the movie Blindside, they saw that the character Big Mike was going to be a potentially good player. So what happened? White family, quote unquote, adopted him. That's another thing. When people start, quote unquote, adopting these, quote unquote, inner city black kids, they're not doing it all just for the kindness of their hearts. A lot of times they see potential in these kids and they want to be right there cashing in on that potential. So we just have to understand the game, family. We have to know what we're working with out here. We're judged by a different rule book. Another situation in Dallas, and a lot of this stuff I'm talking about has happened within the last week, so that's why I'm putting a lot of stuff out there. There was a situation in Dallas. It was a black man working at, I think, the Marriott, one of these hotels in Dallas, an upscale hotel, and he worked as a masseuse. He worked in the massage facility, the massage spa at the hotel. It's one of those hotels that has a massage spa. So he's working as a masseuse. As a masseuse, what do you call the male masseuse? A masseur? I don't know what you call a male masseuse. And there was a lady, 60-year-old lady. I'm assuming the lady's white. Sounds like it was a white lady. She's 60 years old. He's giving the woman a massage, and she said that the man touched her inappropriately. Now, nobody really defined what that was. I mean, that could have been touched on her thigh. Nobody really defined what that was, but the man got arrested. He got arrested and charged with sexual assault. And the woman said, and I'm reading the report, she said while he was massaging her, she kept thinking that he was going to rape her. So this is why I'm thinking it was a white lady. And black women, older black women don't be getting massages like that anyway. That's one thing. But the fact that she was thinking that this guy was going to rape her, that sounds like some old Jim Crow stereotype that this woman had brought over with her from years of practicing systematic white supremacy. And this brother's in jail. Now, I don't know what brother's going to assault sexually a 60-year-old woman. I mean, that don't really sound too cute. And it sounds like she might be on some bullshit. But I hope this brother gets a fair shake in the justice system. Because now, if you got 60-year-old white women accusing random brothers of harassment and assault, because this whole street harassment thing, they keep putting that out there. So you shouldn't be shocked that stories like this are going to start popping up. When they put this, black men are back to harassing white women, now this is going to give every decrepit, rickety, old, haggard white female supremacist a go-kart to go out here and start accusing random brothers of assaulting them. So brothers got to be real careful right now. When you are out and about and you're just making friendly conversation with certain people, you don't know if these people are going to start saying, hey, this dude was looking at my breasts, that was sexual assault. So brothers got to be real careful right now. Brothers got to be extremely careful right now, because this whole street harassment thing, again, I'm not going to go too deep into that, because I've talked about that until I'm blue in the face, but we're judged by a different rule book. Situation with Artie Lang. It was a comedian named Artie Lang, white guy. He's a regular guest on ESPN. He's on ESPN a lot, you know, doing commentary and comedy. And he got into some hot water. And when I say hot water, I'm using that in quotations. Over a series of tweets he got into, he put out a bunch of tweets about a black female host on ESPN. It was a black female host, very nice looking sister. I can't think of the sister's name. Real nice looking sister. And Artie Lang put out a whole bunch of tweets talking about how he want her to suck his white dick, and if he has a fantasy about being Thomas Jefferson and she's on his plantation, and it was some slave rape bullshit he was talking about. It got real dark and vile under the guise of comedy. He was trying to disguise it under the umbrella of comedy, but it got into some real crazy backwoods Jim Crow shit. He was talking about if she ran away, he would whip her, and she whipped him. It was just real weird, and it was just real out there. Some type of slave rape fantasy talking about this sister. And a lot of people were up in arms about it, but unsurprisingly, the people who were not too vocal about it were these white supremacist feminist organizations. They haven't said anything about Artie Lang and his comments to this sister. All of these holla back and street harassment people, they haven't said anything about Artie Lang's comments to this sister. And this just goes to show what I've said over and over again. The only time these white supremacists, feminist organizations speak out against men is if it's a black man doing anything, and that's pretty much it, or if it's a white dude doing something to a white woman. But they will never speak out against white males saying or doing anything to black females. This is why me and other people have been very critical of some of these. They're not even real black feminists. These are fake black feminists who are jumping on the white supremacist feminist bandwagon every time the white supremacist feminists want to jump in and vilify black males. They always bring out the Negro bedwinches. These people are traitorous. And you see that it doesn't go both ways. You see that these same people that you're buddying up with, trying to get your butter biscuit, when it comes to one of them doing something to you, black people, they are not joining with them. They're not joining with black people to throw one of their own under the bus. You judge by a different playbook. Those white feminists, they're not saying anything about Artie Lang and his comments to that black woman. They're not saying anything about that. And they never do. But yet they can still come around the black community and pick out those handful of butter biscuit brigade Negroes and Negresses and get them to co-sign their fuckery. This is why we got to start calling out the butter biscuit brigade. We got to call out the butter biscuit brigade for selling the black community out every single time. Because the white feminists know, they know if they start co-signing black people against a white person, they're going to get called out heavily. They already know this. And this is another reason why, with that street harassment video, one reason why that recent street harassment video was criticized by many people in the dominant society, and there were a lot of conservative white publications speaking out against that. Not because they were trying to defend black men. Let's just be straight on that. And this is why a lot of other black people started to jump on the bandwagon saying, hey, this is racist. Because again, I've been saying talking about the overt racism in this campaign for the longest. So now a lot of other black people are doing it because there are white people who are calling out the overt racism in the street harassment campaign. And the reason why many of these conservative publications are pointing out the racism is because they're trying to make it into a partisan issue, because now it's election season now. Election season is coming up. And now what they're doing, a lot of these conservatives, they're saying, look at these liberal feminists. Look at these liberal feminists and their racism. Because see, now they're trying to point the so-called left and the liberals as being racist, because the conservatives have always been known as the racists. The liberals have always pointed the finger at the conservatives and pointed out their racism. So now the conservatives are trying to do the same thing. And this is something that they're trying to use just for political gain. It ain't got nothing to do with liking black folks or nothing. Just like Neely Fuller said, when white supremacists argue and fight with each other, they have family disputes over who's going to dominate black folks. That's all it is. It's just a family dispute over who gets to dominate and subjugate the black community. So don't be fooled by a lot of these people criticizing each other and their racism, thinking that they're somehow pulling you in and they're going to treat you equal. Again, this is a family dispute where they're trying to one-up each other. So we got to understand that. And speaking of Jim Crow and subjugating black folks, do you guys know that the Army, they put out a memo. They said that it is okay to refer to black people now as Negroes again. In the Army, in the United States Army, it is okay. And I want you guys to look this up. They said it is perfectly fine to refer to black people as Negro. I just want y'all to think about that. With systematic white supremacy, we just keep going into this circle. We go into this big wide circle. You think you're making progress and then you take 20 steps back right into Jim Crow. We're right back into Jim Crow 2.0. That's very disrespectful. Especially black people have fought in every single war the United States has had. Every single one. We've been participants in every one. Before all of these other groups, before these Italians and Irish and all these other groups, German people, all these other immigrants, as a matter of fact, black people have fought some of these countries and helped the United States win. And the countries that we fought, they let their people come over and get a leg up in society over black folks. You get better treatment over the people that fought against you. That just goes to show how deep systematic white supremacy is and how black people are judged by a different playbook. That's very disrespectful to black male and female soldiers to allow them to be called Negro, which is a very old, backwards term now. This is why I'm real big on us identifying ourselves. This is why we're getting the Melanoid Nation Foundation popping. Because it's time for us to start identifying ourselves. The most powerful thing you can do is identify yourself. And this is what we're going to have to start doing. We keep getting these labels that the white supremacists have created for us, and they've defined these terms for us, and then they stick these terms on us and then treat us based on these terms that they created. They treat us in a way that's negative and derogatory based on their terms that they created for us. These are not our own terms. So this is why I've been talking about so heavily the Melanoid Nation, Melanese people, Melanoid, Melanese, because that's our own categorization. That's our own definement. We can categorize and define that as we please and make that something positive. And we got the Melanoid Nation website. That's going to be up in a few days. So I'm going to keep you guys posted on that. And also, speaking of the Melanoid Nation Foundation website, we need experienced writers to help contribute stories, and we need people to intern and all that. So I want people to email me, email your resume. If you are a writer, brothers and sisters out there, you're writers, and I mean experience. I don't want people who's, you know, nigga tweet all day and you say, I'm a writer. No, no, I need some people with some writing experience. Email me your resume at info@tariqelite.com, ladies and gentlemen. info@tariqelite.com. Excuse me. And like I was talking about earlier, man, we have the Butter Biscuit Brigade. And I want to explain exactly what that is. You know, the Butter Biscuit Brigade, that's a homage to the slave mentality. Because like I said earlier, you have a lot of black people who are propped up to dump on black people. You know, Larry Elder, Stacey Dash, Charles Barkley, the Republicans, they just propped up this new sister named Mia Love. She ain't really new. Mia Love has been around for a long time, saying a lot of real slick stuff about black folks. Mia Love, she's like, they're really propping her up. Because what they do, the Republicans, they say, okay, we don't want to be racist. We don't want to seem racist. Look, we're diverse. We got black people, but the kind of black people they have are some of the most anti-black people you can ever imagine. As a matter of fact, go look up Mia Love and look up her husband. And that'll kind of give you an idea where I'm going. But what happens is that the Butter Biscuit Brigade, you got a bunch of black people who are basically apologizing for black people to white society. Hey, white society, I'm sorry for my people being so niggerish. I'm willing to throw them under the bus as long as you can give me some nigger trinkets. And that's what the whole biscuit brigade is all about. The butter biscuit is a symbol of a nigger trinket. Let me explain what that means. You know, I talk about a lot of slave narratives, and I read a lot of slave narratives, and I suggest you read some of those slave narratives too. Around the time of the Great Depression, the government, they went around and interviewed a lot of black people who were former slaves, because during the 1920s and 30s, there were still people who were slaves living. You had a lot of black people who were slaves, they were still living. Some of them were like 80, 90, some of them were even over 100 years old. So the government went around interviewing them during the Great Depression era. And these people gave vivid accounts of what went on the plantations. And a lot of these interviews are at the Library of Congress. They're all over the place. There are books about them. Very in-depth stuff. And one recurring thing that I kept seeing with a lot of the slave narratives, because they just talked about their daily lives and what they would eat and, you know, just what more could you do on the plantation? The plantation life was pretty limited. But one thing they kept talking about, I kept noticing the reference to butter biscuits. About three or four different slave narratives they keep referencing a butter biscuit. And that butter biscuit was something that was very important to brothers and sisters on that plantation. Because one thing they would do is talk about how rare it was to get a butter biscuit. Because a lot of the slave quarters where the brothers and sisters who were enslaved, they didn't have ovens, so they would like kind of cook over a fire. But the ovens were in the big house. And they would make biscuits in the oven, and you would get the brothers and sisters who were enslaved, they would get biscuits on special occasions. They might get it on Christmas or certain Sundays, but the butter biscuit was saved on very special occasions. It was very rare to get a butter biscuit. So the thing is, naturally, with human nature, we value what is scarce. No matter what it is, if something is scarce, subconsciously, we put a value on it. And the white supremacist slave owners, they knew that they could use that against black people, or use that to their benefit, or use that among black people, because they were already enslaved. But they could use little menial nigger trinkets like that to their advantage. Because the thing is, you have to understand, slavery and white supremacy, being under a system of white supremacy, and especially slavery, that puts you in a childlike state. And a lot of black people became, and still are to a certain degree, if we're going to be very honest, very childlike in their desires. If we're going to be very honest, a lot of black people are childlike in their desires. We like shiny things, rims, shoes, and video games, smoking weed, you know, just a lot of childlike stuff that we get off on. Nothing about building. It's like partying and clubbing and that's it. So that mentality was magnified on the plantation because now you're in a smaller space. So you, in many cases, don't feel like you're ever going to leave. So you start to value menial things. You value certain things that you can kind of take pride in among the plantation. Because you can't take pride on the plantation of being a homeowner. You're subjugated. You can't leave. You can't pride yourself on raising a family. Why? Because your family can be taken away from you. Your son can be sold off. Your daughter can be sold off. Your wife can be raped by the master. So there's not too many things you can take pride in. So there were childlike things that we had to take pride in on those plantations. And the biscuit, that was like a status symbol because it was so rare and because the white male female master would give it to you on a special occasion, they valued that. It became a status symbol. And in the slave narratives, a lot of them would talk about how the missus would give them a butter biscuit if they told on somebody. And it literally says that. One slave narrative, it was a sister. She was 83 years old. She was a former slave. And she talked about as a kid, they would get a butter biscuit from the missus if they were to tell on somebody or report some kind of misdemeanor upon somebody else on the plantation. So they would get that as a reward for snitching on other black people. Another slave narrative was a man. He was a kid as a slave, and he was like around 90 years old at the time of the interview. And he talked about how one time he got a butter biscuit. I think it was a special occasion. I think it was a holiday or something, but he got a butter biscuit. Well, I'm not sure what he did. I forgot what exactly he did to get the butter biscuit. But the master, I think it was the missus, gave him a butter biscuit. And he described how he ran down to the plantation to show the other boys his biscuit. So he didn't really eat it right away. He wanted to show it off after he got the butter biscuit. So again, it was that status symbol. The butter biscuit became the status symbol. It meant that I have this butter biscuit, so that means I'm in good graces with white mommy and white daddy. That's all that meant. And black people then, just like a lot of black people now, they value that more than anything. Getting in good graces, getting a pat on the head from white mommy, white daddy. Black people value that. That's why you have people who will sit up here, get on television, and they can't wait to dump on other black folks, throw black folks under the bus, sit up here talking about, well, I tell my white friends, white people ain't the problem, it's black people the problem. When you start saying stuff like that, you're trying to get that proverbial butter biscuit. That's that butter biscuit brigade talk. That nothing more, nothing less. My thing is, if you are criticizing the community for certain things and you're doing it for the sake of being constructive, that's understandable because, look, I've had a lot of criticisms for certain behaviors, but I work in the community. I get out here and I chop up game to try to fix it from within. That's what I do. And I call out negative behavior that's going to poison all of us when we're trying to move towards the same goal. So it's very constructive criticism. One thing I will not do is sit up around white supremacists and throw bricks at other black folks. Now you're just a nigga trying to get a butter biscuit. When you do that, you're trying to get a butter biscuit because every other group, they know not to do that with their own. They know not to side with black folks against their own. That's why you won't hear none of these white feminists criticize Artie Lang for shitting on that black woman, talking about fucking her and raping her like she's a slave. Because they have that code. We're the only ones sitting up here embarrassing ourselves, trying to get that butter biscuit, thinking you're doing something special by throwing other black folks under the bus. Sitting up here with the white supremacists getting that pat on the head. They're giving you all the airtime you need to dump on other black folks so they can just give you that butter biscuit. Because a lot of times these black folks ain't even getting a lot of money for it. That's another thing. We think that they're getting paid a lot. Some of them are, but most of them are not. A lot of them will just do it just to get that approval. They just want that proverbial butter biscuit. So we got to be very clear and very weary of the butter biscuit brigade out here. These pretend black feminists who will sit up here and co-sign laws being made against black folks. Those are people part of the butter biscuit brigade. When these athletes get up here and talk about other black football players are not smart and they should be punished, but then they don't criticize these people for co-signing the Artie Langs of the world. Because with that whole Artie Lang situation, it's very funny how when Stephen A. Smith made very innocent comments, he made a very innocent comment when he was talking about Ray Rice. He was like, well, Ray Rice and his wife, you know, I think his wife, you know, she's kind of responsible too. That was an innocent comment. He wasn't saying that she deserved to get beat up. But the white supremacists took that, flipped it, and they ran with it and used that against him. And these same white supremacists are not saying anything about Artie Lang, and his comments were explicitly vile. Because again, they know the code. And they ain't trying to get no butter biscuit from nobody. It's only us trying to get that butter biscuit looking like Sambo's. So we got to understand the game and have integrity about ourselves. And when we see niggas out here trying to get that butter biscuit, keep them far away from the community and our progress. Anyway, y'all, that's been today's episode of the Tariq Elite Radio Show. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to go to TariqElite.com to get the fresh clothes and gear. And don't forget to go to TariqLive.com to join me out here in Los Angeles for a lecture screening. Not this Saturday, but the Saturday after next. Out here in Los Angeles, go to TariqLive.com for more info, and I will holla. Peace.